welcome to Film Fragments, a podcast where we take fragments of an actor, director, and genre and tell you our favorites from their catalog. My name is Brian Sheffield. I'm your host, and I'm very excited to welcome you guys to this week's episode of Film Fragments, where today we're going to be delving into the films of Paul Dano. His new film, Dump Money, hits theaters this week, so I thought it'd be a perfect opportunity to delve into the career of Mr. Paul Dano, and I'm very excited to welcome today's guest. Our guest today is Tara Huntsberger. She's a contributor over at Hear Us Scream and Manor Vellum, and she's also a Cherry Picks approved critic. Taylor, welcome to the show. How are you this morning?
Thank you. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. I cannot wait to talk about Paul Dano with you. And before we get into talking about Paul Dano, I'd just love to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself, talk a little bit about what got you into film and why you love it so much.
Sure. So I was not really into film until 2017, which is the year that I was working at an independent movie theater near my college, and that was the year that Lady Bird came out, and Call Me By Your Name, and Phantom Thread was that year too. It was a big year. Yeah, and I worked during like the Oscar season, so it kind of opened my eyes to like what movies could really be, and they were just movies that I was just much more interested in. I think before that, I just like had not seen movies that were that I really liked. And that's kind of it. And then I worked there for a year. It's probably the best job I've ever had because I could just sit and watch the movie while it was playing. Yeah, and now I just love movies.
Well, that's very exciting. And you picked a great year to start off with because 2017, oh my God, so many of my favorite films of all time come from that year. I mean, you literally said probably the three best films that came out that year and Call Me By Your Name, Lady Bird, and Phantom Thread. Like, you literally said the best three. So that's amazing. That's great. Very happy that you got to work that job. And now you're here talking about film with me, which is an unfortunate situation. But hey, that's okay. It's going to be fun to talk about Paul Dano. And speaking of Paul Dano, obviously Paul Dano is a very likable presence in Hollywood. He's obviously one of the most respectable talents that we have in the industry today. So why do you think a lot of people get excited whenever they see Paul Dano's name attached to a project? Why do you think people go out of their way to see something that he's in? And what makes you such a fan of Paul Dano?
I feel like my fandom of him was kind of like a bit for a while, even though, and then it just like kind of turned into a genuine appreciation because I think his like earlier stuff was very, especially Ruby Sparks was very like, he's like, was kind of like this weird guy. He's just like a really nice, weird guy who plays like really weird characters. And is very versatile. And when I was rewatching his movies this week, I just felt like everything he does is very earnest. And I think that's what gives him the ability to, like, both be very, like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, not nice guys, but, you know, very, like, straight characters. Like, in The Fabelmans, it's very, different from what he normally does. So he can do that. And then he can also do stuff that's like really out there, and all of them work for him. And I think upon like looking at him, especially the beginning of his career, he's very like, he's like a white guy who looks kind of nerdy and like a like everyday kind of guy, but then plays these characters that are really like big names, and all of the projects he's worked on are like the best of the best. So, and as I was watching like interviews with him, it's just like very clear that he loves film, and he's like very serious about how much he just loves movies, and you can tell by his work. I think he's just a very exciting person to watch because he can just do, I think, like, anything because of the way that he approaches things.
Yeah, Paul Dano is a talent that I always get excited to see whenever his name is attached to a project because he is someone that, like you said, could really do pretty much anything. He has done so many different kinds of roles. He doesn't stick to one specific role. He could play someone that's very quirky, but you could also play someone that's genuinely terrifying to watch. I mean, you watch him in a film like, say, Ruby Sparks, for instance, or you watch him in Love and Mercy, then you realize, oh, this is the same guy who also did Swiss Army Man later on. He also did There Will Be Blood in his career. He also played the friggin' Riddler. I mean, the guy has done so many different roles, and it's really impressive to see the range that he has as an actor. And he's also proven himself to be a really impressive talent behind the camera, too. Unfortunately, and this is a spoiler alert for the episode, but because he's not in the movie, we unfortunately could not include Wildlife on our list, which breaks my heart, because if I was able to include it, if he were in it, I'm not even joking when I say this, I think Wildlife would actually be my number one Paul Dano film, if he were in it. But that's no disrespect to Jake Gyllenhaal, of course. But yeah, I love Paul Dano. I always get excited whenever I see his name attached to a project, and I cannot wait to delve into our favorite films today. So let's not waste any time. Let's just get right into our top five favorite films starring Paul Dano. So Taylor, what is your number five favorite Paul Dano film of all time?
Okay, I know this is going to be a hot take, and it's only because I just watched it over the past few days, and it's There Will Be Blood, which I know is, I think, usually higher up on people's list, but I think it's just because I'm new to it. I watched it specifically for this because people said he was really great, and I think, I think watching it now, after being familiar with his other work, makes a lot of sense to me because I think the way that he plays that character, I mean, yeah, if you haven't seen the movie, he plays like a very religious priest, very, I would say, televangelist before televangelism was a thing. But I think he's very easily able to play a character like that because a lot of his earlier roles are, or maybe not even earlier roles. He just like has this presence that he can like very much command a crowd in a like very soft-spoken manner, but then really goes out there and you're not expecting. I think a lot of what Paul Dano does is the way that he looks makes you not expect the way that he acts. And I think that helps him a lot in There Will Be Blood because he is a pastor or priest, so he presents himself as this godly man, but then you see these few scenes where he really goes out there and like is compelled by the spirit and is like possessed in a way that's scary. I think he has a really good command of styles like that. And it feels like There Will Be Blood is like a combination of things that he's done before where he can like really hone it in and is very, and especially in like the last scene where he is being asked by Daniel Day-Lewis to like say that God is not real, and you can feel that he doesn't believe, like he doesn't want to say that, but can also like really go out there, and he doesn't seem like there's something in him that doesn't click that his religious extremism is scary. He just has a really good control of that character too. Because I think the more extreme parts kind of come out of nowhere. And he really like is able to escalate that because of how straight he plays that. And I mean, he plays two characters who are in a lot of ways very similar, because when the second Paul Dano showed up, I was very confused. I didn't realize that there were two of them. He did just do it all.
Well, you said before that a lot of people have this higher on their list, and you are correct, because I'm going to pass on this one. It's a little higher on my list, so I will be talking about it when I get to it. I cannot wait to gush about this movie and why it's pretty much a masterpiece in every sense of the word. So my number five is Love and Mercy from 2015. This is a music biopic about the Beach Boys headliner Brian Wilson. I will admit that I haven't seen this movie in so long. I don't think I've seen this since it came out almost a decade ago. And I didn't love it as much as a lot of other people, to be honest. Music biopics for me are so hit or miss. I mean, biopics in general could be all over the place for me, but music biopics in particular, especially now with such an overabundance of them, I never know how to feel when I walk out of a music biopic. However, this was one that I was pretty positive on, and it was mainly because of Paul Dano's performance. Him playing young Brian Wilson, he was insanely good, and I mean, you never walk out of a movie with Paul Dano and say that Paul Dano is not good, but, like, he legit was out of this world brilliant as Brian Wilson. He captured what we love to see in Brian Wilson, and I'm not a huge Beach Boys guy. They've never been the group that I've, like, gone crazy about, but I really love the approach to this film as well. And I really love how, low-key, I think it's great how the filmmakers literally didn't give a shit by casting two actors who look nothing alike to play Brian Wilson. It's like, oh, who are you going to have playing older Brian Wilson, a.k.a. an older version of Paul Dano? Oh, we're just going to have John Cusack, who looks nothing like Paul Dano, play him. But you know what? I didn't mind it because I thought both of them were great in the role. And Paul Dano, I think if the cards were played right, and if the studio had really campaigned the crap out of this, I honestly think Paul Dano would have had a potential of getting Oscar nominated for this film. Because he did get some love throughout the critic organizations. He was nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actor for this. And it's a really good music biopic, and it does jump around a lot through time. I just think the approach to it is so different from your typical musical biopic now that stands out from all the others that we have gotten in recent memory. And the scene that has always stuck with me the most regarding Paul Dano specifically in Love and Mercy is the sequence where they're all at the dinner table, and then you just hear the cleaning of all the utensils and the plates, and he just, like, holds it in, and then he just screams from the top of his lungs to stop. And it's really terrifying to see the start of the downfall of Brian Wilson's mental health. But it's a really great biopic, one that people should check out, specifically for the work that Paul Dano brings to that role. And that is my number five. So, Love and Mercy, are you going to pass, or is this not on your list?
It is not on my list, and that is because, yes, I saw it once, like, a while ago, and don't totally remember a lot of it, but I do listen to his cover of God Only Knows often.
Yeah, it's great. It's so good. Yeah, Paul Dano, I think, should have been nominated for this. Like, if you're going to nominate a music biopic performance, this should have been one to recognize because, listen, when I think of music biopics now, it's like, oh, one of the worst ones in recent memory won the Oscar, which is so disappointing. Listen, no disrespect to anybody out there that likes Bohemian Rhapsody, but I'm sorry. That's one of the most disheartening Oscar wins of the last 10 years. It just makes no sense. I mean, I get why it happened, but I also don't get why it happened. Anyway, let's move away from talking about that movie because I don't want to have an aneurysm live on air and go into our number fours. So, Taylor, what is your number four?
My number four is Prisoners, which I just saw yesterday because I never heard of it. And I was watching interviews and also the, I think it was the GQ video where he talks, where Paul talks about like his biggest like career films. And he talked about Prisoners, which I'd never seen before. And I know his role in it is very small. If you haven't seen it, it's like Hugh Jackman's daughter is kidnapped. She just disappears with her friend. And then they suspect it's this guy, Alex, who is Paul Dano. He's like sitting in an RV outside of their house when they disappear. And so Hugh Jackman kind of like, he kidnaps Paul and like tortures him. In an abandoned house to get information because he thinks that Alex is guilty. And no spoilers for the end because I was just like not expecting any of this movie. But I think what works so well about Paul, I mean, I guess kind of spoiler because this is going to be a reason why I liked it, is that he's not guilty. But he does know information, so that's like not incorrect. But his character is like a stilted, like 20 something who was kidnapped at a young age as well, and just like doesn't have the brain capacity to respond to people. So the whole movie, he's just like not really giving information or talking. And that's why Hugh Jackman like kidnaps him and tortures him. But you start to realize that that is who he is. He is a person who was kidnapped as a child and doesn't have the brain capacity to give information. And so the whole movie, but you don't know. Like, you really, like, there are moments, like, that are very violent that just come out of nowhere. There's a scene where he, like, Hugh Jackman is, like, watching him, and Paul is, like, walking the dog outside and just, like, violently takes the dog off the ground. And so you're like, oh, did he do this? And the whole movie, you really are wondering, like, is this who this person really is, or is it all an act? And you, like, really can't tell. And he's, like, doesn't really talk in the movie. There are parts of the movie where he's, like, trapped in a closet, and you can't see anything other than his one eye. And you can still, like, get everything from that. There's a scene where his face is completely blown up because of how much he's been beaten, and you still, like, get stuff from that. It's just, like, there have been now multiple roles he's had that I guess we'll talk about later also, maybe, where he doesn't talk, and you're still able to get so much. And I think if anyone else were to be playing that, or if the role was to be played differently, like, it would have given away. There's a twist to the movie, but there's also, like, a big part of the movie is that no one knows, and everyone's just running on suspicion, and, like, everyone ends up kind of being right, at the end, but he's, like, at the center of it. That is a major point of the movie, even though he's not really in it.
So, unfortunately, Prisoners is not on my list, and it's really disappointing to say that, because this is one of the best films that I've seen maybe of the past 10 years. And it's funny, when we're recording this, we're actually a couple of days shy of its 10-year anniversary, which is nuts. It's absolutely nuts that this film came out 10 years ago. I'll never forget first seeing that trailer and just seeing all these incredible actors in it, and just seeing the premise and how it sounded really, really cool to watch. And I never knew who Denis Villeneuve was. Not really anyone knew who he was. And now he's regarded as one of the most celebrated filmmakers working. I mean, Prisoners, Enemy, Sicario, Arrival, Blade Runner 2049, Dune, and soon Dune Part 2. It's incredible the filmography that he has had these last couple of years. And Prisoners is really exceptional. And specifically going off Paul's performance, I really like how stilted he is. He's very muted. He doesn't say a lot. He conveys so much without saying really anything. And that's a very hard thing for an actor to pull off successfully. You could just see so much through his face, and you don't know if you trust him or not. And yes, even though it is revealed later on that he wasn't who kidnapped the girls and everything, you still just ask yourself, did he actually do it or did he not do it? And it's a really beautiful performance. It's honestly one of Paul Dano's most underappreciated performances, because not many people really talk about this one when they speak about their favorite works from Paul. But it really is an incredible showcase of acting for him. But it's also just an incredible film, period. It's so good. The entire ensemble knocks it out of the park. I think this is probably the best acting that Hugh Jackman's ever done. And yeah, I think it's a performance that really should have gotten recognized for the Oscar. Like, and I feel like he was very close. I think in a perfect world, he would have gotten recognized for this. It's a really exceptional film. And without spoiling anything, I mean, that last scene has not left my brain at all. And without giving it away, since you said you just watched this recently, how do you feel about that ending? Do you think something good happens, or do you think nothing good happens? Without giving it away, obviously.
I do. I think I do. Because actually, I don't know, because Jake Gyllenhaal is just very, the thing is that he's very untrustworthy, but also I don't think he, I mean, separating from the fact that he is a cop, but, like, you know, in this world, he's untrustworthy, but also I don't think, yeah, I don't know, because I don't think in, like, his, like, I think he would still try to do something, even, yeah.
I like how they leave it up in the air. I like how they don't tell you what happened. I think it adds a lot to the mystery of it. I don't like when movies always give you answers. I like when they leave the audience to interpret things for themselves. And I genuinely think that that was the best way to end that movie. And I think it's one of the better endings of literally, like, when you talk about great movie endings, I think that's a definition of a great movie ending. Oh God, I love that movie so much. It's so good. It's really just incredible work. And my number four is The Batman. I have that as my number four. I'm a huge Batman fan. Batman is my favorite superhero. I'm not as big of a comic book movie guy as I used to be. The superhero genre has definitely overstayed its welcome, in my opinion. But I think universally one of the best reviewed superhero films of the past decade, I would say, is Matt Reeves' The Batman. Because Matt Reeves did an incredible job of not making this your run-by-the-numbers superhero film. This was a crime noir detective movie first, and then it was a Batman movie second, which I really appreciated. And you want to talk about a great ensemble? Like, I mean, we were just talking about Prisoners, which has a great ensemble. I mean, the Batman's ensemble kicks so much ass. Robert Pattinson, great Batman. I've had full faith in him since day one. When he was announced to play Bruce Wayne Batman, everyone was complaining, but I was like, shut the hell up. This is actually going to be a great casting, and it was a great casting. Was he emo as fuck? Yes, he was, but that's okay. That's his own spin on Batman, and it worked for that kind of Batman that we were watching. Zoe Kravitz as Catwoman, great. Colin Farrell as the Penguin, great. Jeffrey Wright as Commissioner Gordon, great. Who else am I missing besides Paul? I'm trying to... I know I'm missing some... Andy Serkis as Alfred, great casting, but Paul as the Riddler. When they announced that Paul was playing the Riddler, I'm like, yes. Yes. This is it right here. Now, we don't see Paul's face a lot throughout the film. We don't really see Edward Nygma's face that much throughout the movie. But if you were going to cast anyone who could play weird really well to play this character, Paul's a perfect person to bring this character to life. And I really love that he added his own spin to the character, because we had obviously seen certain interpretations of this character on screen, the most popular being Jim Carrey and Batman Forever. And I mean, you could say what you want about the movie itself, but that role was pretty much tailor-made for Jim Carrey, especially at that point in his career. And I think the way that this role was written for this film, I think Paul was the perfect person to bring this character to life. And the whole interrogation sequence between him and Batman was unbelievable. And the voice that is utilized from the Riddler, where he's wearing his outfit and his helmet and everything, oh my God, it's so good. It's really incredible. Some of the smoothest 3 hours that you will ever see is on display in this film. The filmmaking is next level. The score, the cinematography, the editing, the visual effects, the action sequences. That chase sequence is literally one of the best sequences that I've seen in a film in the past 5 years. I think that is truly extraordinary work across the board. The Batman was in my top five of last year. It's hard to believe that this film came out a year ago. It feels like it came out so long ago, because I remember it got delayed so many times. Obviously, COVID had a big impact on the movie, but it was such a phenomenon when it came out. Like, everybody went out to go see Batman, and a lot of people loved it, even the people that don't care about comic book superhero movies. And when people who don't like a genre celebrate a film in that said genre, that's saying a lot about the film that you play, because this isn't a movie. This was a film. This was something really special. And I adore the Batman. I cannot wait to see where they go with this interpretation of Batman. Will Paul come back as the Riddler? I would think so. I think he would come back. With the way that the Batman wrapped up, I think we're going to see him again. But I'm mostly excited to see Barry Keoghan as the Joker. I'm very excited to see what they do with that. Yeah, the Batman is my number four. Fantastic film. Love it so much. And I love Paul as Edward Nygma. And his first scene where you see his face, the delivery of this line, I don't know why it makes me laugh so much, just because it's so creepy. He just turns to Commissioner Gordon and just goes, I just ordered a slice of pumpkin pie. It's great. It's so good. I don't know why I love it so much. But yeah, the Batman is my number four. Are you going to pass or is this not on your list?
Pass? Yes.
Nice. Can't wait to hear your thoughts on it. So now going into our number threes, what is your pick?
My number three is Batman.
Nice.
Yeah, I was a Batman. I wouldn't even say kid. I was really into Batman in high school when The Dark Knight came out. I was into the comics for, like, quite a while because of that trilogy. Anyway, I love this movie, and I kind of fell off of comics and superhero movies for a long time. I don't really watch the Marvel ones very much. But I love that this version of Batman really feels like a comic book. It feels like Batman comics. It's like dark in a fun way. And I really like that it's mostly a mystery. It's mostly detective drama, which is what I really like about Batman. And I think the best part about Batman is that his villains are so interesting. And that's, yeah, why the Riddler. And I love that they started with the Riddler. I know the Joker is, like, the primary villain of Batman, but the Riddler is equally as interesting, at least to me. I think I am still shocked that they actually cast Paul, because I think... I don't know people really in the industry, but like I do think he tends to like get overlooked for how good he is, and I am just like really thrilled that they like thought to cast him, because yeah, I really think no one else could have done that. And I think it's, yeah, even the parts where, like, aside from the parts where we can't see his face, like, when we can see his face, like, I think us knowing who Paul Dano is and who he plays really, like, adds to his performance, because, yeah, he does just, like, his thing is playing weird little guys. That's just, like, his genre, but he doesn't look like that. I think the way that Paul Dano looks really helps his performances and things, and especially this, because he just, like, looks like a guy you can talk to. And when you listen to him as a person, he just seems like a really nice guy that you, like, want to, like, a really smart, nice guy. And then, like, the fact that that nice guy that you see, this, like, nerdy guy who wears clear-rimmed glasses, is, like, a devious killer who's very smart, enough to like plant puzzles, is like, yeah, I just like, I think that this is the role that really like is a combination of everything that he's done before, because you can see like, I mean, this happened before the Fablemans, but like that really straight man style, again, it's very similar to There Will Be Blood, I think, in a way that like, there's like something like unsettling about him, but you don't know what it is. And then he just explodes. And it's also just fun. yeah, he's just a fun guy.
Yeah. Couldn't have said it better than myself. Love the Batman. Love that it's in your top three. It's such a great pick. And my number three is a very different film from the Batman. My number three is Swiss Army Man from 2016. And, man, you know, I remember hearing about this film back in early 2016 and how people walked out of it during its premiere at Sundance because they're like, why am I watching a movie about a farting corpse that is apparently not dead? What? And he's played by Harry Potter? What? But you know what? It sounded very enticing to me. I was so intrigued, and I watched it, and then I walked out of it going, wow, that actually moved me way more than I was expecting. Swiss Army Man is fantastic. It's very out there. It doesn't take itself seriously one bit. But it is genuinely such an original film that we're not used to seeing. And I respect that so much about what the Daniels brought to this film. This was their first time really getting any notoriety in the industry. Nobody really knew who they were. Obviously, now everybody celebrates it because of the success of Everything Everywhere All at Once. But Swiss Army Man is so much fun. It's so entertaining. And the reason why it works as well as it does is because the brilliant chemistry between Paul Daniel and Daniel Radcliffe. I think they work off each other incredibly well. And I think both of them were perfectly cast for their roles. I mean, Paul Daniel kind of did his usual Paul Daniel shtick in his role, but no one expected Daniel Radcliffe to play this character of the Foreign Corps. And you know, at this rate, everyone was still just seeing him as Harry Potter. And I mean, rightfully so, because Harry Potter took up such a large portion of his career. And I really respect how Daniel Radcliffe has done whatever he's wanted to do post-Harry Potter. I think in terms of the three of them, he's definitely been the one that has done pretty much really anything. I mean, he's done horror movies, he's done straight-up comedies, he's done romances, he's done thrillers, he's done action movies. He's about to be on stage again. Like, he's done theater, which I really respect about him. He definitely is my favorite element of this movie, but him and Paul have beautiful chemistry with one another. And the character of Paul, I mean, the movie literally starts off with him deserted on an island trying to kill himself, and then he comes across Daniel Radcliffe, and then this very unique friendship blossoms between the two of them, and it's a fun time to watch. It's filled with so many laughs, so many heartfelt moments, and honestly, some heartbreaking moments, too. And I think with Paul, you know, his character's going through such a struggle eternally and externally, and we're seeing that unfold as the movie progresses, and it's a really emotional journey. And you definitely did not anticipate getting this when you go into a movie about a foreign corpse coming to life and essentially being a Swiss Army knife. But I love that so much. The originality here is really extraordinary, and I would love to see Paul and Daniel work together again. And I do hope that Paul Daniel works with the Daniels again. I mean, now that the Daniels are essentially some of the hottest names in the business right now, fresh off of all the success that Everything Everywhere had, you know, winning Best Picture and winning Director and Screenplay and all these other accolades, I do hope that Paul gets the opportunity to collaborate with them again. I went to a Q&A earlier this year. They were doing a series of all the Daniels' work in the midst of their successful awards run. And they did a screen for Swiss Army Man. And Paul Dano was involved with a Q&A right after the screen with the Daniels, the producer, and Paul Dano. It was so cool seeing Paul Dano in person, first of all, because that was a surprise, because there was no announcement prior that he was even going to be there for a Q&A. And just hearing him talk about how joyful of an experience he had working with the Daniels and bringing this character to life, it's really incredible. And it shows that Paul Dano has a real knack for comedy. He could deliver something very, very dry, and somehow it finds its way of being hysterical. Love Swiss Army Man. Fantastic film. It's one of those films where I understand if it doesn't entice everybody. I totally understand it's not for everybody. But this guy right here absolutely adored Swiss Army Man. So that is my number three. Is Swiss Army Man a film you're going to pass on, or is it not on your list?
I'm going to pass.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. So now we get to the top two. I have a feeling, and I could be wrong, I'm going to take a guess that Swiss Army Man is your number two, but we will see. So I know for a fact we have another film in common, because there's one film that I haven't mentioned and a film that you haven't mentioned either. And unless you haven't seen said film, then that's going to be very shocking. So let us know your second favorite Paul Dano film of all time.
It's Little Miss Sunshine. Yeah. when I started watching Little Miss Sunshine, I did not know that he was in it. And I think, yeah, I just like, I think about that scene where he learned, okay, if you haven't seen Little Miss Sunshine, it's basically like a dysfunctional family and a young girl wants to go to a beauty pageant. And Paul Dano's character really wants to be a pilot, and he will not speak to his family until he becomes a pilot. And there's a scene when they're driving where his sister does a colorblind test with him, and he learns that he is colorblind and cannot fly, and just starts banging his head against the van, and then makes them pull over, and he just like gets out of the car and runs and starts like screaming and having a meltdown. And I just like, I think about that scene all the time, because the whole movie he's playing like this emo kid, and I think it's very funny because he's also not the type of person who I would have pictured to be playing like an emo teenager who like refuses to speak to his family. But he like very much is like the epitome of teen angst, like the whole film. But then in that scene, you really understand how much this dream of his like means to him, and the fact that he can't do it is just so like, it just shatters his entire world. And yeah, like the whole time I feel like we underestimate him because he's like a pain in the ass, and he won't talk to his family, and he like, you know, is very teenager, and that he like is a moody little brat. And then we really understand that like these things still mean a lot to him, even though he's not like, his character is very, it's not like he's a caricature of anything, because he's very playing very true to what it's like being a teenager and like a low income weird nuclear household. Or I guess it's not really a nuclear household, it's like a little different, but yeah, it's just like that moment just like, I think really also solidified how good Paul Dano is, because you can really, yeah, feel how like devastating this is. And I mean, I'm sure that when I was a kid, if someone told me that there was something that would prevent me from doing what I wanted to do with my life, I would be that upset. I mean, I would be that upset now. Because it feels like everything you've been building your life up to, even if you're still young, is just gone. And then what else does he have? Because also at this time, a lot of the attention is on his younger sister and his like uncle who tries to kill himself, and his grandpa who's sick and eventually dies, spoiler. But yeah, I think about that performance like all the time, and I think it's truly one of his best, and it's wild that he was so young when he did that.
So that's also my number two. I mean, you pretty much said everything regarding Paul's character in the film. Very muted performance, similar to Prisoners. This was obviously way before Prisoners, but, you know, the idea of him just basically being silent until he's able to fly planes is a very fascinating character trait about him. And then just learning that he is colorblind. I mean, that's every time I've watched this movie so many times. I've watched this so many times. It's one of my favorite films of all time. I adore Little Miss Sunshine so much. Every time I watch it and I know that I'm about to get to that scene where it is revealed that he is colorblind, it's really devastating to watch, because like you said, imagine being in his shoes, being so excited to do this thing that you have dreamt of doing, and then to learn that you can't even do it, that's devastating. Like, yeah, when you're a kid, you would definitely feel upset, but also low-key as an adult, you could kind of feel the same way too. Especially when it's something that's out of your control. That's the scarier part of it, is that him being colorblind is completely out of his control. And it's not like he like broke his arm or whatever, and it's like, oh, you could just heal your arm and then you'll be fine. Like, he's colorblind and he can't even fly planes, and that was his dream. And it feels like because he can't do that, that he has nothing now. he feels like he's nothing. And that's utterly devastating to watch. And the film is devastating, but it's also so incredibly funny. I mean, this movie can make you laugh 1 minute, then make you cry the next. It's really incredible the work that the two directors were able to bring to this. I think the screenplay is absolutely extraordinary. I love how every character has their moment to shine. I love how every character gets the equal amount of appreciation as everyone else, because there are some movies with ensembles to where one character gets more appreciation than another. All six of these family members get equal appreciation and their equal amount of time to shine. And this is a great ensemble, too. There's no weak links in this cast at all. I mean, Paul's great, and then you have Greg Kinnear, Steve Carell, Tony Collette, Alan Arkin, and, of course, Abigail Breslin. Everyone delivers a great performance. Each and every one of these actors are great. Every single one of them. And, you know, I'm a sucker for dysfunctional family entertainment. I love watching a family just go crazy and go on quite a journey emotionally, physically, mentally. And just, you know, dysfunctional family films and TV shows could be really entertaining to watch. But again, there's also so much earnest to this project as well, because these are all characters that are broken in their own way. They're all going through something emotionally in their own capacity. Like Greg Kinnear, he just wants to be able to do a great job with his job and sell this product. Then Steve Carell recently just got over trying to commit suicide and lost his lover and everything. Then Tony Collette's trying to build a perfect home. Alan Arkin is going crazy. Then Abigail Breslin just wants everyone to feel loved and just have a happy family. And I love seeing how this film unfolds. I think it's fantastic. It won the Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay, rightfully so. And Alan Arkin, rest in peace, who we recently lost, he won the Best Supporting Actor Oscar. And it's a very, very good win. It's not the performance that I personally would have awarded, but I think it's a deserving win for sure. And the entire ensemble kicks so much ass. Everyone is great. The ending is amazing at the beauty pageant. It's wonderful. It's like everyone feels free now. Like everyone finally feels free and they're just letting it out. I adore the movie. It's one of the best examples of blending comedy and drama so seamlessly and making it not feel forced and gimmicky. Little Miss Sunshine is a gem of a film. It's a pioneer of independent cinema. I mean, it had its premiere at Sundance. Not many people really knew what it was about. And now it's regarded as one of the quintessential independent darlings ever. There's a reason why so many people have celebrated this film for the past almost 20 years. It's never gone old, and I don't think it ever will get old. There's a reason why this will be such a staple for years to come. And I love it so much. It's a really great film. And Paul is fantastic in it, as is the entire ensemble. Love Middleton's... Wow, I can't even talk. See, me loving it so much means that I can't even gush about this film properly. I love Little Miss Sunshine. It really is fantastic. And if you're someone out there that somehow has not seen this movie, well, you're doing yourself a huge disservice by not seeing this. It's a gem. It's fantastic. Love Little Miss Sunshine. And that is why it's our number two. So now, ladies and gentlemen, we get to our number one favorite Paul Dano film. And we're going to go all out with talking about why we think that these are our favorite Paul Dano films. So obviously there's a film that Taylor had passed on that I mentioned, and there's a film that I passed on that Taylor had mentioned. So Taylor, please tell me and the audience why you think Swiss Army Man is your favorite Paul Dano film of all time.
I just love it. I love it so much. And I also, I am not into gross out humor at all. So like, when I first saw it, I had, like, heard of this movie because I wasn't a Harry Potter kid by any means, but I was really into Daniel Radcliffe. And when I did know that, like, I was aware that he was doing another movie. I had never seen it, but I just watched it in 2020, and I don't think I knew what it was about. I don't think I knew that Paul Dano was in it. I just, like... It was on Netflix, and I just, like, watched it. And this was before Everything Everywhere All at Once, so I didn't know who the Daniels were. I mean, you said a lot of it. I just think this is, like, what Paul Dano does best. And although his scary characters, I think do tend to intrigue me more. I just like there's something about this one that just like is so fun and really captures, I think, the part of Paul Dano that's very like charming and with lack of a better word, like wholesome. Like there's just something about him also. I think that really plays to when he plays darker characters, that he's so extremely likable. And there's something about him that just feels very warm, and I think that really comes out between him and Daniel Radcliffe. And I would even go so far as to say, not that this is exactly a romance, but I feel like the bond between them is more leans towards romance than exactly friendship. I mean, like they kiss, I mean, and I know it's because like they're playing these characters, but like it's very clear that like it doesn't really matter like whether it's friendship or romance. Like these people just like really found love for each other and what they're doing on this island. And when they are like leave the island, it's just like devastating because then we see how other people see these people, which, yeah, they're probably Paul is probably not the best person, as we learn like at the end. And I also think a lot of his like yearning for this mysterious woman who ends up being just like a woman he sees on the bus every day is very reminiscent of Ruby Sparks. And I don't know if like that was on purpose, but I do really think like that plot line really starts to get into the territory of Manic Pixie Dream Girl, but that like aids to the end where that's just completely shattered, and then you see that this person is like probably not a good person, but on this island he's like able to like be himself. It's so weird. I don't even know how to describe it because I don't know how to feel about his character, because you really love him and then you realize that he is kind of a creep. And but like what are we supposed to do with that? We don't know anything about this guy other than what he's telling Daniel Radcliffe, who might be alive or might not be alive. But he still really cares about this person, and he's just like able also because they're like doing these little plays and they're pretending to be other people. Like he's able to play so many different parts in one role, and he's basically playing against an inanimate corpse. And a lot of the movie, Daniel Radcliffe doesn't talk and is just like an object and is still able to play against that. Yeah, it also just seems like they're having the time of their lives, and that it just, yeah, I don't know what else more to say. I just love it so much. I don't even really know still like what to take away from it other than I just re like watching them just is so funny and also makes me cry and like makes me just like, yeah, I just love them.
Did you ever think that when you had watched this for the first time, that the guys who directed this would end up being Academy Award-winning filmmakers? Because I didn't.
No, but that's because I don't think a lot of people like, yeah, I think like I see how this led into Everything Everywhere All at Once, but this is the type of movie that I like and that I really am into, and I don't think it's for everyone, but also I feel like among film people, people do tend to like this movie. And thankfully the Daniels have been successful now, but I do feel like they could have been those people that everyone like really loved and just never got the recognition they deserved. The fact that this was like a debut, this is their debut, right?
I believe so. I'm gonna fact check that right now.
It's just, yeah, I mean, it's just like,
Yep, this was their
yeah,
debut.
it's just like, and some of the like gross out humor is not exactly for me, but I don't think like I love the rest of the movie so much it doesn't bother me, because I do think sometimes gross out humor can go into, like, being, like, tacky writing, but I don't think it is in this case. Like, they really made it work and, like, took weird, gross-out humor and made it, like, function in their... Like, they justified everything that happens in the movie. Yeah, and it's also weird to me, now that I'm thinking about it, like, none of the movie is about them, like, trying to survive, or, like, the island simply feels like the setting of the film, and the plot of the film has nothing to do with him trying to, like, survive on the island. I mean, he does try to leave the island, but once he meets Daniel Radcliffe, like, that is the version of his life that he wants to leave, is, like, just hanging out, and living out what he wants in his life. I mean, like, it's hard to say because his character is clearly, like, maybe not the best person in the real world, but in this world at least, like, no one's trying to deny him of the things that he wants, and he just gets to have them. And so then he's less sad.
Yep. Great film, great choice, great number one. And my number one is There Will Be Blood, which is also similar to Little Miss Sunshine, one of my favorite films of all time. Paul Thomas Anderson is my favorite working filmmaker. I've talked about PTA way too much on this podcast, and that will never stop. So I'm sorry to anyone who's tired of hearing me gush about Paul Thomas Anderson, but you're just going to have to accept it because he is the best at what he does. And There Will Be Blood is not only my personal favorite film that he's directed, I also think it's the best film that he's directed. I don't think he's been better than this, and I know it's all subjective and everything, but this to me is the best PTA has ever been. Daniel Day-Lewis, arguably, honestly, maybe the best performance I've ever seen in a film. Really top-tier acting. It's unlike anything that I've ever witnessed before. And it's insane how this man is able to go to the places that he goes to, and that it's just an acting performance. It's incredible. And there's a reason why DDL is regarded as one of the finest actors of all time. There's a reason why he's going to go down as one of the greatest actors that we have ever had. And this performance is one of the greatest that we will probably ever see. But we're not here to talk about Daniel Day-Lewis. I would love to talk about Daniel Day-Lewis till the end of time, but this is a Paul Dano podcast, so we're going to talk about Paul Dano. So when I first saw There Will Be Blood, like you, I was very confused too when I saw that there were two Paul Danos in the movie. And I personally am not a fan of when we have the same actor play twins. I'm just like, what is the point of this? It's just way too confusing. It's not like The Social Network where it was kind of easy to know which twin was who, even though they were both played by Armie Hammer. But when it comes to this film, it's the only nitpick that I have with it. Literally the only nitpick I have with it is the whole twin stuff. Not the characters, but just... I don't know how I feel about that. However, Paul is amazing in this. It is a truly fantastic performance. And one thing that I feel is crazy that I didn't bring up at all is that a frequent thing that happens with Paul Dano in most of his movies is that he gets beat up a lot. That's a very common thing with a lot of his movies. And you watch There Will Be Blood, and oh my god, the man gets, like, punched and plummeted so many times. Friggin' Daniel Day-Lewis drags him into the mud, and Paul Dano also has the decency of squealing like a high-pitched girl. That's something that he also does, but it's so weird because you look at Paul Dano and he tries to come off all tough and talk very soft like this, but then he squeals like a girl and it's like, oh, well, so much for being very masculine, Paul, and everything. But I love it. It's a very entertaining side of Paul Dano. I remember watching the movie and I'm laughing my butt off, and it is a really funny scene where he gets dragged into the mud and starts slapping him and everything. That's great, but yeah, it's like you said before. When we're first introduced to Paul's character named Paul, he's very nice and calm and reserved. And then you come across Eli, who's very much into God, very religious and very out there. And you think of that sequence in the church where he's going crazy and just, like, exploded and telling Daniel to just scream that he abandoned his child, and then he starts slapping him and everything. But then that all comes back to him in that very final scene where Daniel just goes to him and says, "I drink your milkshake. I drink it up." And it's great. One of my favorite endings of all time. Honestly, top 10 endings to any film I've ever seen. But yeah, there's so much to be said about There Will Be Blood. I feel like I've said everything that I need to say. If you have any interest in listening, go listen to my PTA episode that I did with the very lovely Sophia Simonello, and just hear me gush about the genius of There Will Be Blood. But Paul Dano, he's fantastic in this. I don't understand why he didn't get any love the award season for this. He should have been nominated really across the board because of how big of an award star when There Will Be Blood ended up being. Daniel Day-Lewis won pretty much every Best Actor prize that entire season, and rightfully so. And I really do wish that this film did win Best Picture, but this was the year where it was up against No Country for All Men, which is also a masterpiece. So it's like you're picking two masterpieces against each other. So it's like there's really no wrong answer if No Country were to win or There Will Be Blood were to win. I personally would have wanted There Will Be Blood to win because we still live in a world where Paul Thomas Anderson does not have an Oscar. You know, I just brought up how the Daniels are Oscar winners. How did they have Oscars before Paul Thomas Anderson does? They have 3 more Oscars than Paul Thomas Anderson does, who doesn't have anything. And it's so disappointing. I know that Oscars don't matter, but it's like, come on. Why doesn't PTA have an Oscar? Also, why doesn't Paul Dano have an Oscar? That's absolutely absurd. He should have been nominated. The freaking man should have been nominated this past year for The Fabelmans. I'm sorry. Obviously, as you guys see, The Fabelmans was not on either of our list, but we'll talk about it probably in just a little bit. But I love what Paul Dano brings to There Will Be Blood. I think his chemistry with Daniel Day-Lewis is really unbelievable. Their banter with one another is a highlight of the movie for sure. And it was a great showcase of how people need to take Paul Dano seriously because, yeah, he was in Little Miss Sunshine prior to this, but that was a more comedic movie than this. But also, like, a thing that shouldn't be ignored is that he was in The Girl Next Door, which, you know, you watch that movie now and you're like, oh my God, that's Paul Dano. What are the odds of seeing this guy who was in a Paul Thomas Anderson movie or all these other acclaimed movies, seeing him in the great rom-com The Girl Next Door? That will be mentioned in my honorable mentions later on. But yeah, There Will Be Blood, easily my favorite film starring Paul Dano. I love it so much. It's really fantastic. And, you know, there's a reason why people still talk about this film to this day as possibly one of the greatest films ever made. And I think it's also one of the best films of the 21st century so far. We're 23 years into the 21st century, and this is still regarded as one of the best of the entire century so far. And rightfully so. So There Will Be Blood is my favorite Paul Dano film of all time.
Yay!
Oh, man, I'm glad I let that all out. So we're going to touch upon some of the films that didn't make the cut. But before we do that, let's recap our list from 5 to 1. So, Taylor, what is your list?
Okay, number 5, There Will Be Blood. Number 4, Prisoners. Number 3, The Batman. Number 2, Little Miss Sunshine. And number 1, Swiss Army Man.
And to recap my list, coming in number 5 is Love and Mercy, number 4, The Batman, number 3, Swiss Army Man, number 2, Little Miss Sunshine, and number 1, There Will Be Blood. So that is it with our list, so let's talk about some of the films that didn't make the cuts. So Taylor, what are some films that you want to give a shout-out to that didn't make your top 5 list?
Yeah, so definitely The Fabelmans, which I have not seen since I saw it in theaters, but I just am very glad also that he got the chance to, it's very weird, like, seeing him go from, like, Little Miss Sunshine to The Fabelmans and playing a very, not that he's, like, too straight of a character, but playing, like, a father figure who's emotionally, like, has emotional depth in other ways than anything else he's played. It just, like, yeah, I love that. The thing is that I don't have much to say about, I think, his character, because I think the movie itself is just, I just really loved it, and I think, the star of the movie is the actor who plays Sammy Fabelman, who's
Gabriel LaBelle.
Yes, because, yeah, and I think, but I do still remember that scene where Sammy has a panic attack for the first time, and Paul, like, calms him down, and I think Sammy in that moment really, like, sees his father as a person. I guess this whole movie is about discovering that your parents are people too, and how that start. Like, this movie is about making movies, but I think it's the things that I like most about it are the family dynamic and this young kid, like, really discovering things about his family and just, like, having to cope with them in any way that he can. And Paul's performance is, like, I just think it's not like anything else he's done before, 'cause he's so used to playing things that are really out there and really weird. And this is, like, a father who is still a person. But yeah, it's kind of nice to see a different side, especially right after playing the Riddler. And it's just really lovely. Yeah, I just, like, I'm really glad he also was asked by Spielberg to, like, be in this movie. Because as we've been saying, I think it's not that he tends to get overlooked, it's that I don't think he's as regarded as, like, how good he is. And as one of the, like, he should be winning more awards and things, you know? So there's that. I'm trying to think. That's, like, the one that, like, comes to my mind. Oh, and Okja. I would say the same thing about Okja too, that he is able to, like, play a more like reined in type of character whose whole mission is that he just really loves animals and is trying to protect these people. I think this one and the Fablemans both feel more grounded. Not that his other roles don't, but they definitely feel more like real people than a lot of the other roles that he's played. Does that make sense? Like, his other characters are very, very specific. They're very character roles. And Okja and the Fablemans are more, they're like more calm, to be honest. And I think play really well to his strength as, like, a person. He's very personable in them, and he's also, like, playing off kids in both of them. I really like both of those. I'm trying to think. I have seen Ruby Sparks, but it's been a very long time. And I've seen Love and Mercy, too, and it's also not one of my favorite movies, but he is really wonderful in it, and the way that he talks, like, in interviews about working with Brian Wilson is really nice. I think they're just, like, other roles. Like, I know that I think his thing is, like, these big character, like, roles in all of these masterpiece films. And it's nice to see him sometimes do other movies where he, like, gets to play stuff that's, maybe even more true to who he is as, like, a person.
So, for me, in terms of honorable mentions, I'm going to say that I will mention the Fablemans. I don't love the Fablemans as much as everyone else does. I love Steven Spielberg, obviously. I mean, who doesn't? But I think the idea of having Paul Dano play Steven Spielberg's father is a really inspired cast, and I think that's a really cool cast. And first of all, him working with Spielberg alone is really exciting, but I also just found this to be a really, really good performance, and it's unfortunate that he didn't get recognized, because I thought that this would be a shoe-in for him to get recognized, because it's like, oh, it's a Spielberg movie, and he's playing Spielberg's father. Like, this seems very much up the Academy's wheelhouse, but no, they instead nominated Judd Hirsch, who was great in the movie, but he was only in one scene. It's like, oh my god, like, really? That's a bit of a hot take, but I don't love Judd Hirsch's performance as much as everyone else does. And I think Michelle Williams's performance, and this is just my opinion, this is no disrespect to anybody, I think her performance wasn't that great either. to be honest. I really don't. That's a hot take. That's a different discussion for another time. But Paul Dano should have been nominated. I'm sorry. I thought this would be a shoe-in nomination for him, but he didn't get any love that award season, which is sickening. So hopefully down the road he will get his long overdue first Oscar nomination. Okja, that's a great honorable mention as well. I do love that movie. I'm a big fan of Bong Joon-ho. I'm starting to slowly get into his work. I mean, after Parasite, that guy could literally direct whatever he wants, however he wants. So I'm really excited to see that. And I do really like Okja and Paul's performance in that. I will also give a shout-out to 12 Years a Slave, even though his role is pretty small in that. That's a great film. And that's another movie where Paul Dano gets the shit beat out of him, and rightfully so, because, I mean, he's a scumbag in that movie. A true scumbag in it. Capital S, for sure. And then I am going to say, because I have a soft spot for it, The Girl Next Door. I think The Girl Next Door is just a great rom-com. Do not watch the trailer, because the trailer presents the movie as something that it ends up not being. So don't watch the trailer for The Girl Next Door, unfortunately. It's not that it spoils anything. It just completely mismarkets the movie. So just be wary of that. If anyone out there listening has not seen The Girl Next Door. And then another small shout out is Looper. Looper is a great sci-fi film from Rian Johnson. And Paul is great in the film for his time on screen. And, you know, you can't go wrong with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So, yeah. And then, of course, obviously Prisoners, which we talked about earlier. And, yeah. Yeah. I have not seen Ruby Sparks, so I'm sorry to anyone listening that wanted my thoughts on that. And I also haven't seen Youth. I want to see that one, too, and I haven't been able to see that one. So, can't always get around to seeing everything, but hey, that's okay. There's plenty of movies that all of us haven't seen. But also, let's talk about some of his upcoming work. So, the first being Dumb Money, which by the time you guys are hearing this, will already be out in theaters. Now, I have already had the opportunity to see this movie. I just got back from the Toronto Film Festival and they made its world premiere there. I saw it there. I thought it was entertaining. I thought it was enjoyable for what it was. And Paul was an absolute delight to watch. You never go into a movie knowing that, thinking that Paul Dano is going to be bad. And he was a fun addition to the cast. I mean, he's the star of the movie and he's very, very good in it. And I feel like this is going to sit well with audiences. I think this is going to be a crowd-pleasing film. Critics may be very mixed on it, but I think audiences are going to walk out of this being very high on it. It's very much a movie that the audiences are going to eat up. So, yeah, those are my thoughts on Dumb Money. So, as you, someone who hasn't seen Dumb Money, what is your anticipation like for this movie?
Oh, I'm so excited. When I first, I like forgot that this movie was happening, and then I saw the trailer and I was like, Paul Dano! And I just love when he's playing like a weirdo guy, like just like a little guy. I just love it. And I love America Ferrera. I'm a huge fan of Superstore, if anyone's watched that, but that kind of just like, I just love her. I really do. And I'm glad that she's finally getting... It's not that she wasn't getting work before, but she was on Superstore for so long that she hadn't been doing a lot of other stuff. And now that she is, I'm just, like, thrilled that they're in a movie together. It looks funny. I don't know anything about stocks or money or finances for the most part. So I'm just, like, excited by the cast, I think, more than anything. Yeah, that's it.
And then he also has a movie coming out called Spaceman, which is directed by the man who directed the entirety of Chernobyl and stars Adam Sandler in another serious performance, but also stars Paul Dano, Carey Mulligan, and Kunal Nayar, who's best known for being on The Big Bang Theory. So this is another sci-fi drama. Now, on paper, the story doesn't sound too incredibly exciting to me, but the reason why I'm excited for this is because it's another showcase of serious Adam Sandler. And I love when Adam Sandler steps away from the comedy and does something more serious. I mean, his performance in Uncut Gems will never leave my brain. Punch Drunk Love, recently he was in a film called Hustle, which was great. And I'm very excited to see him collaborate with Paul Dano. I don't know too much about the story other than the basics, but I am genuinely curious to see how this film plays out, mainly because it's another showcase of serious Adam Sandler. So, what is your anticipation for Spaceman?
I had never heard of it until right now, so...
You're a fake Paul Dano fan. I'm just kidding.
I never heard of it until right now. I also, because I work, like, I mean, sci-fi is not my favorite genre, but because I work primarily in horror, I will say that I have more of a, I tend to pay more attention to horror releases than anything else, so, but that's exciting. I mean, I'm going to see it. I also like Carey Mulligan a lot, so, yeah.
Absolutely. And speaking of Carey Mulligan, and we'll just make this very quick, like I said at the top, we unfortunately did not put Wildlife in our list, but I feel like we have to give it a special shout-out because it's his directorial debut. He co-wrote it with his partner Zoe Kazan, and it is, in my opinion, not only one of the best films directed by an actor of the past 10 years, I also think it's one of the best directorial debuts of the past 10 years, and it makes me crave more films from Paul Dano behind the camera. I love Wildlife, and I wish it was a film that got more recognition because, you know, if the proper studio had handled it, honestly, maybe we could have seen that be a possible award darling. We could have maybe seen Paul Dano get his first Oscar nomination. Maybe it wouldn't have been for his acting, but if it were for his writing or directing or both, I would have been very, very happy with that. Wildlife is great. Yeah, if anyone out there listening has not seen that movie, it's slow. It definitely takes its time getting into things, but if you're very patient, you're going to end up being a big fan of this movie, just like me. So, Taylor, have you seen Wildlife? If so, what is your take on it?
Yeah, I actually saw it when it came out at the IFC Center. I live in New York, so I did see it on MoviePass because MoviePass still existed then. I primarily saw it, we won't get into it. I was a huge fan of Jake Gyllenhaal. I've since worked with him and not my favorite person.
Oh. However,
acting-wise, I knew that Paul was directing it. I would say I've gotten more into Paul Dano in the past few years than when this came out. So I was primarily seeing it for Jake Gyllenhaal. But yeah, I still remember, I haven't seen it since, and that was like 2018. And I still remember some of the scenes. And also to like have a movie be that much from a child's perspective. It also has been very clear to me, and I've like said it previously, that I watched a bunch of interviews and just like videos of Paul talking about movies the past few days, and it's just very clear to me how much he loves film. It seems like he primarily got interested in film from like foreign films. And I think has a very different perspective than maybe most actors. He just seems like he really loves film and, like, really understands it in a way that I, like, you know, trust him to direct and write movies. And I wish I could say more because I don't totally remember a lot of it. But I do remember, I mean, it's the poster, but the like, scene of them getting family portraits done and his mom and dad, like, sitting apart from each other. It's just, like, a very devastating movie. But I don't think I've ever... I haven't seen a ton of movies that are, like, looking at adults from what it's like to be a child. And I'm a children's librarian, like, full-time, so I spend a lot of time with children. And I think that is very interesting to me. And I think the work that he does with his wife is very interesting to me. I don't know a lot about her work on her own, but I think it's very cool that Wildlife and Ruby Sparks are two extremely different movies, but I think you can tell which person made which one. And it's also very interesting to me that that's the type of movie that he ended up making based on Like, I just, yeah, there's something about him that is just always so unexpected. Like, I just, like, can't really predict what he's going to do based on, like, what he's talked about before. It just seems like he's interested in everything and is able to do everything. And that's very exciting. And I think it's possible, especially when Ruby Sparks came out, that he could have been pigeonholed as, like, a romantic lead. And that's not what happened. And that's very cool. I think that's a big reason why he fascinates me so much and I like him so much is that, like, the demeanor that he has in his early work really set him up to be a certain type of, like, twee kind of guy, you know what I mean? Like, he could have really gone that, like, indie comedy kind of route and didn't do that at all. And really just, like, went out there and did whatever he wanted and somehow was lucky enough to, like, all of his top work is, like, these big masterpiece movies, and that's really wild.
You couldn't have said it any better. It's really incredible to see the trajectory of his career and how, you know, he could have been pigeonholed into doing one specific kind of role or one specific kind of film, but he's done pretty much everything. He's done whatever he wants. He's done whatever has catered to him most, and I really appreciate that he doesn't stick to one specific kind of role. He does literally everything, and yeah, I've been a fan of Paul Dano for a long time, and I will be a fan of Paul Dano until he decides that he doesn't want to work again. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that's a perfect time to close out this episode. And Taylor, thank you for coming on. I had such a great time talking with you today about Paul Dano. It was really great, again, to hear your take on your favorites from him, but also it was just great meeting you. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much. You have not, like, it's been, like, I think a thing with my friends that I love Paul Dano. And as I said, sometimes it's like a bit. I'm like, oh, Paul Dano. Because, like, no, I feel like at least among my friends who aren't really film people, no one really talks about him that much. And so when I got this opportunity, I was so excited. I told everyone. I was like, I get to talk about Paul Dano. Yeah, so I really thank you so much. This has been so fun.
Absolutely. And where could the audience find you online? Where could they find your work?
So I primarily write for Hear Us Scream, which is a horror website, because I work full time now, so I don't do as much writing, but you can find me at Tay Parade at all of just Twitter and Instagram. Yeah, but you should check out our website. We write all things horror. Yeah.
I will put links for that in the description below, and you guys can follow me on all social medias at Brian Sefio. You guys can subscribe to this podcast on any podcast platform. We have a Twitter and Instagram, so you guys can stay up to date with what's going on in Film Fragments. Let us know your favorite film star, Paul Dano. Would be really curious to hear your guys' list. And thank you so much for listening to this episode. I really, really appreciate it. Be on the lookout for more great episodes coming your way in the coming weeks. Lots of great topics, lots of great guests. So stay tuned for that, and I will see you guys for the very next episode of Film Fragments. Take care, everybody.